Off the ball. Rugby.
It's a more appealing game to watch, for example, New Zealand and Ireland, South Africa, because of the way South Africa, brilliantly tactically set up to win games.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
US Sport.
On Off the Ball.
With 888 Casino. 18 plus cgamblingcare.ie.
Well, Cian's with us in studio. How are you?
I'm replacing Mick this week. If he's not with us, I'd kick him out.
No, Mick. No, Mick this week.
He saw that Drake May performance at the weekend. He was like, I'm not coming in talking about that.
Oh, but was he not very good?
Well, they didn't win, and they weren't exactly playing Titans of a... Well, I say Titans as if Titans are good, but as in a good team in the NFL, as far as I can remember. Who were they playing? It's a great start.
Yeah. I was going to start by saying the 1972 Miami Dolphins are all drinking champagne this weekend because obviously the last unbeaten team in the league have been beating the Kansas City Chiefs. Beaten overnight, deservedly so, by the Buffalo Bills?
Yeah, I think that Dolphins team are kind of... They weren't really too concerned, I imagine, because it's a funny thing. Like, normally you have a team that goes 9-0, and like we talk about it every single week, you think when they lose, they've probably played a bad game or they've played an outlier for what they did the rest of the season. And that just wasn't the case. They played the exact same game they played against the Broncos last week. They just managed to lose, or they managed to pull that one out, and this week the Bills won the big moments. I think the difference between the two quarterbacks was kind of key. Not in the sense that it's anything defining, because obviously Mahomes has had Allen's number over the years. But like Mahomes started off the game with an interception. Like he's got 10 this year or whatever it is. So he's got a lot of interceptions this year. But he started off the game with an interception you don't expect from him. He's in a clean pocket. He looks to his left. Travis Kelce is covered. A defensive lineman jumps up in front of him. And he completely panics. He just starts running forward, running into his pass rush. And then tries to throw the ball late when he's being hit by a defender to Noah Gray, who was wide open within the structure of the play. He could have just stood there and thrown the ball to Gray. And like we've talked all year about how the offensive line isn't playing well enough. The wide receivers aren't getting open. This was a scenario where Mahomes just didn't do the job. And like that was one play at the start of the game, but it was kind of a key one because the Bills were able to settle their offense. They got a big play to Amari Cooper straight away, scored a touchdown, got the lead, and kept the lead from there, essentially. So while there was lots of other issues, Mahomes kind of put them on the back foot straight away. And that's generally what you need from the Chiefs to actually beat them, because you're not going to get 3 interceptions or 4 interceptions of Mahomes. Get one or two big mistakes and you'd be happy.
I didn't realise that. I'm just looking up the Patrick Mahomes record against Josh Allen in particular, and obviously wins is not a QB stat, but anyway, he's 1-4, Mahomes.
Mahomes is 1-4?
Yeah, in the regular season.
Oh, there you go, yeah, because what is he in the playoffs?
3-0, yeah, 3-0, and it's like it's...
I'm pretty sure he'll take that.
Yeah, and so, again, it's kind of like, oh, this really matters, but it doesn't. Or this doesn't matter, but maybe it does.
Well, I would say the thing that mattered most last night for the Chiefs moving forward is they tried to streamline their offense through Xavier Worthy. And Xavier Worthy showed you why he was a top pick, and he also showed you why a lot of people thought he shouldn't have been a top pick, because that speed, that like the straight line speed he had for his first touchdown where he comes around the end and gets to the pylon and beats the linebacker there, that's the kind of thing that Andy Reid has just tried with over the years. But then you have the deep shot play on the second drive of the game where he's wide open and all he's got to do is reach out and catch the ball like this, but he wants to catch it into his chest like that. And that's the difference between him being over the sideline or him being in bounds. And it was issues like that with Worthy throughout his college career, and issues like that which separates him from Rashee Rice, who he's trying to replace, and then the absence of Isaiah Pacheco as well, because they had a couple of running plays yesterday. Like Kareem Hunt had a couple of good runs, so his stats probably weren't that bad overall. But there was some situational running where you like you give the ball to Pacheco here, they're getting the first down. You give it to Hunt, he's getting stopped in that crowd where they're just missing their two key big players. They don't have guys who can step up behind them. So that'll be the long-term concern.
But Xavier Worthy is only 21, so you assume that...
It's a big ask of him.
And if he continues to get better in this setup, which you would presume will, although you can't presume anything... he'll be one who is amazing in a couple of years' time.
Probably with Andy Reid's track record as well. Yeah. Like it's not like you can learn how to run 22 miles per hour, whereas you can learn how to catch a ball properly.
And
you know?
And to run their routes. And I do wonder if like something like this, which is a bit of a breakout performance in a way.
Yeah.
Do they build on this now with him? And is actually, are they looking at this going, yeah, okay, so we lost the record. Now everybody stops talking to us about the 1972 Dolphins. And we can get on with the business of winning the Super Bowl, which is really all we care about.
The Chiefs do really kind of need that, don't they? They struggle to get motivated and win big games and stuff like that. So they're blessed by this loss. But I think for Worthy's point of view, they force-fed him a little bit. So it depends on his mindset, because he can take away the big plays he made from that game and be really, really excited. He had one curl over the middle against zone where he caught the ball in rhythm and completely made two defenders miss. And that was actually an incredibly good play. and it was actually preceded his touchdown, I think, at the start of the second quarter. That kind of thing, if he looks back on that and he thinks, right, this I can do this in this league, I can beat people at this level, but he could also go the other way. He could look back and go, I had those two opportunities, I had that route, it didn't run very well. So it's all about that mindset factor, which, look, we can't decipher from here. We'll figure that out. Andy Reid generally is one of the best people to be with, regardless of how your thought process is. So, and when it comes to wide receivers, they take time to learn. So he's in an unenviable position. He shouldn't really be being asked to fill the role he's being asked to fill. But DeAndre Hopkins can't really run as well as he used to. Made a couple of plays last night, didn't really have as much of an impact as he should have. Made one ridiculous catch and one-handed grab going out. But he's more of an 8, 9, 10, 11-yard receiver right now. He's not the 20-plus, the big chunk plays that you need. So a lot is on Worthy, and especially with Kelce having another quiet game.
Yeah, the Bills moved to 9-2. The Chiefs are 9-1. Is there still a possibility that the Bills might end up being the number one seed here and that the Chiefs have to go through a more difficult path?
100%.
And that actually the Bills have home advantage when they play the Chiefs in the big game.
Well, I'm not sure how many division games they've got left between them, but I'd be very surprised if they were completely done with all theirs. But like, if you look at the Chiefs division, you've got two teams there that can possibly beat them. If you look at the Bills division, I mean, the Dolphins might in a day, but they generally don't. The Patriots aren't. The Jets aren't. The Jets are awful. Like, this is two teams in very, very different positions for the running. I think the Bills as well are... Look, last night's game, you have to give it to Josh Allen because he made big plays and big moments. The final drive of the game was fantastic. He made that running play for the touchdown at the end where he beats three guys, and it felt like a moment where Josh Allen has been like, look, this guy has beaten me in the big moments. I'm making sure we win this game no matter what. And he kind of went into a little bit of a beast mode run at the end. But throughout the game, he was very accurate. He played within himself. The interception he had in fourth down wasn't really his fault. It was a little bit reckless, but I wouldn't be killing him for it. Overall, he kind of carried the team and carried the offense. And the identity of that team this year, it's been fascinating to watch because they were the reckless big play, create outside of structure, do madness, all that kind of stuff. And now it's like the most controlled offense. Like, James Cook ran for two touchdowns, but didn't have loads of stats and big numbers. He was able to be effective when they needed him to be effective. The offense was able to move the ball when they needed to move the ball. They were in a very tight game at the end, and they put that drive together to 8 all the clock, moved them to 8 points or 9 points, whatever it was, to win the game ultimately. So they're in a really good position. And it's kind of interesting because not that long ago, everyone was on Sean McDermott's back. Everyone was like, yeah, get Sean McDermott out of there, get Sean McDermott out of there. He's continued to just do a very, very good job in Buffalo, and you've got to give him a lot of credit.
Yeah, I think they were, they're being rewarded for being calm as opposed to just responding to it. And we'll see as the season goes on how fit everybody is when hopefully they end up meeting again.
There are definitely still question marks about how much firepower they have on offense, you know?
The other big game, which I think in the build-up everybody was predicting was going to be a shootout. The Ravens have a bad defense, but they have a brilliant offense. They're going to be able to score in the Steelers' defense. They weren't able to do it until the very end, by which time it was too late. The Steelers are a real team. They're doing great. They beat the Ravens, and they beat them playing stereotypical Steelers football, incredibly strong on defense the whole way through until the very end. They kick their goals, which is important. And Russell Wilson is more than adequate. He's actually decent.
A significant improvement on Justin Fields, really. The real key for them in that game, on offense at least, was his connection with George Pickens. Now, Pickens did not have the big numbers in the game. He didn't have the downfield throws. But it very much reminded me of when Wilson was in Seattle with Jermaine Kearse. Jermaine Kearse was the third option behind Doug Baldwin and Golden Tate back then. But he always had a much better connection with Wilson than the other two. He had that understanding in key moments. Kearse wasn't a huge athlete. He wasn't an incredible route runner or anything like that. But whenever they needed to put a ball in the right spot, Kearse was the one who could adjust and adapt to it. Pickens made 4 or 5 plays in that game where it was a complete feel of the two of them just being on the same page, understanding exactly what they needed from that play and just making it happen and make it work. And that's been the big key difference between him and Justin Fields. Fields has all the athleticism, has all the ability to break out and make big plays, but he just doesn't have that element of touch, that element of intelligence, that element of understanding, the experience that Wilson has of being in this league for 10 plus years now. So that has pushed him above. And like at this stage, I think I especially fall into the trap of like wanting the Ravens to be the better team because they clearly have the higher upside with the much better quarterback with all those weapons. But the reality is they don't play to their talent level consistently enough. You have Zay Jones dropping that big pass in the fourth quarter by letting it bounce off his face mask when he should easily catch it. Lamar had to make the same play 4 or 5 times because this is a team that leads the league in penalties. They have minus 217 yards in net penalties for the year, which is more, it's just 78 more than second place. Like, you're starting essentially every single drive on 1st and 11 or 1st and 12 rather than 1st and 10 because of the penalties in the offensive line, the defensive side. So there are so many issues with the Ravens, whereas the Steelers don't reach the same heights, but they stay consistent to that level of being an above average and effective football team, which is very, very difficult to beat week on week. And since I was all a Steelers fan back in the day, I've brought in my James Harrison jersey from when I was young. And because now James Harrison, if you don't know James Harrison, James Harrison was a defensive player of the year, MVP of the Super Bowl, I think, against the Cardinals. And he, sorry, Santonio Holmes was, but he made the biggest play in that Super Bowl. But he is now playing, or he was playing at a level back then that was just incredible, where he'd take over games on his own. And TJ Watt is kind of at that stage now where, like, you're talking about a guy who he probably will make the Hall of Fame. James Harrison hasn't, but probably was worthy of it if he had a longer career. He's taken over games in such a way that it's ridiculous. It's beyond belief.
And he's doing it against the really good teams.
Yes. Well, the only caveat, he does generally, but for this week, the only caveat is this week he did it against an awful offensive line. Like, the Ravens' offensive line is such a problem. It's getting ridiculous at this stage. If they're not losing their blocks, they're moving too far afield to negate passing plays. Like, it's all these little things, or they're false starting, or they're just lining up wrong. It's so many, for a John Harbaugh team, you don't expect this kind of beating yourself in precision.
So it's still early, right? Real season doesn't kick off until Thanksgiving, is the cliche. Is it too early for us to be saying that they can't fix that, and that actually if they fix that, the Ravens I'm talking about specifically, that actually this doesn't matter at the moment? What matters is being in form. And so we still have the Ravens, the Steelers, the Chiefs and the Bills at the top of the AFC, and that's an incredibly deep top four.
I mean, Derrick Henry fumbled for the first time in 580 touches, I think it was, at the start of the game, the Steelers up.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen regularly. It's not going to happen probably again this year, maybe. You have Justin Tucker missing two field goals. You had the Ravens playing poorly in the positions where they're weakest, and the Steelers still won by, what, 6 points? 5 points, maybe? Like, they scraped past them. Like, that's how good the team is. So I have no real concern. Well, I have concerns about the Ravens in the sense that they're so inconsistent, maddeningly inconsistent. But Lamar covers so much and elevates so much around him, you're still not going to be confident picking anyone else against them beyond Patrick Mahomes' Chiefs. Maybe you could argue the Bills at this stage because they're playing that well. So,
the other one, we're sticking with the AFC, the Chargers-Bengals game. This is the other Harbaugh, and this is also one of the best QBs in the league. And the Bengals are involved in a lot of the best games of the season, but they keep coming out the wrong side of them.
Yeah, so here's one that's good for you. You might have it in front of you there. I can't remember if it was written in the notes, but Jim Harbaugh taking over this Chargers team this year, defensively, they are giving up, I think, is a 14 points or 15 points per game, whatever it is, below 20 points before last night when they gave up 30+. That's the first time head coach to come in and do that since Jim Harbaugh on the San Francisco 49ers when he came in. So he's got a proven formula there where he gets the most out of people. And last night they were generally very good. Joe Burrow was pushed to another level to try and pick them apart in the second half, but they did come close to chargering, as we like to say, because they were 24-6 up at halftime. Overall, though, Chargers team, I mean, it feels like they're building. Ladd McConkey's getting better. Quentin Johnson's making plays consistently now, which no one ever expected to happen based on the start of his career. So there's a lot to like there, and Herbert is just, like, what a quarterback. What a ridiculously good quarterback.
Who I think people at the start of the year weren't quite sure. Certainly over the last couple of years, they were like, oh, he gets injured a lot.
Yeah.
The seasons have been bad. Is it his fault? Is it the Chargers' fault? It turns out it was the Chargers' fault.
A big surprise, right? Because they've never ruined a bunch of talented players in the past. Like, the big thing for him is he's just been hit so much. Like, he came into the season not fully healthy. I think with the way he was running last night, he had that one fumble where he tried to run over a defensive back and the defender stripped it from him. That was a bad play, obviously. But he still ran for, I think, 70 yards. And they were, like, really high-value running plays where you were in a position to be sacked, or it was a play where you needed that 4 or 5 yards or 6 yards and he was able to get it. He was running looking for contact, which isn't a good thing, but when you're a quarterback who's kind of had question marks about your durability in the past and you're running over defenders, it's kind of like, oh, you're definitely fully healthy now, because you wouldn't be making that choice if you weren't fully healthy, you know? The thing about them is the talent level, similar to what we were talking about to the Ravens, but to probably more of an extreme degree, the talent level there is so high when things click properly. But the question mark is over that mindset and the mentality. And actually, you could say that about both teams last night, because the last 3 minutes of that game, both teams were trying to lose. There was missed field goals, there was interceptions, there was turnovers ruled off for penalty. There was missed third down plays when the receiver dropped the ball. It was like one of those games where you give the Chargers credit for winning, but ultimately it was more like they were the last team to lose it, I guess.
The other thing to just talk about briefly in those... last thing in the AFC, sorry, is Anthony Richardson. We've seen him come out of the team. We've seen Flacco go in, and Flacco couldn't catch lightning in a bottle again like he did last year.
What a surprise.
And again, I think we saw this week everything that's good and bad about Anthony Richardson.
Yeah, well, to be honest with you, I'd lean there was more good. So the first half was solid, okay? It was fine. He hit some throws, missed some throws, got some sacks he shouldn't have got sacked on, had a fumble where he actually started fumbles in the start of the third quarter. But he had a sack he took he shouldn't have taken. And then at the start of the third quarter, the Jets were starting to build a little bit of momentum because they did nothing on offense in the first half until the final drive when Breece Hall broke away from the defense and ran in a 20-plus yard touchdown. And then Richardson fumbled on the first play of the third quarter, and you're thinking, oh God, this is like this guy's just cursed. It's not going to work. And from there, it felt like a position where Richardson was like, look, this is either going to crater, I'm going to be a disaster, or I'm going to answer this. And from there, he was just like locked in every single play. It was like, this ball's going here, this ball's going there. I'm beating the defense before the defense even knows what coverage is playing. He led a touchdown drive in the end of the third quarter, started the fourth quarter. That was outstanding throws, outstanding running. He ran over two defenders, beat one with pace, and then used his bulk to go over them at the end zone. And then the final drive of the game, he's just hitting throw after throw after throw, and the defense can't get near him. And like the reality of Anthony Richardson is, you as a defense can't stop him and contain him unless he is the one making mistakes and missing throws because of how strong his arm is. Like he hit one throw up the seam to Josh Downs where the defense had it covered perfectly. The window was non-existent. But his arm strength and velocity when he controls that ball properly is just, it beats coverage. Like, no matter what, great offense will always beat great defense because of the way the game is set up. And when you get to the end of the game, he obviously went the game on the final drive and the final play, and it's all dramatic, and he did brilliantly. He came out afterwards and he spoke about it, and he was like, that's the most calm I've ever been in my career playing football. That most calm after the fumble, he was just like, the end of the game, I think there was kind of a release valve of, I've been benched once already, I've already been written off or whatever, so let's just go and play. Now, the question mark is, can you bottle that and do that moving forward? Can you hit that deep ball to Alec Pierce over and over again the way you did in the final drive where you suckered Ahmad Gardner down forward with a pump fake and then hit him in behind? Or will you do what you've done too often at times where you're throwing the ball wildly over players' heads? So if he can figure that out, what he bottled or what he did in the second half and bottle it and move forward, we're talking about one of the best quarterbacks in the league. Whereas if we have this kind of inconsistency still, you're going to have all this talk all the time about, oh, should he be starting? Should he be benched?
Again, he's still so young that actually it could be 3 years before he gets that level of consistency. And what you have to do as a head coach is keep your job.
Well, the thing I really liked about the coaching staff this week, they called the game properly to his skill set. So there was a lot of running plays. There was a lot of involving him in the running game, which they didn't do previously. It was go out there and play like Joe Flacco, which is just not smart because that's not who he is. So if they continue to do that, happy days. We'll be delighted with what they do. And I think the consistency will come. If they start messing around and changing things up constantly, that's where I feel from.
It is kind of a wild. The AFC, very strong. Those four teams that we've talked about at the top. The NFC at the moment, obviously, you've got the Lions, right?
And the 49ers.
Who are excellent. The 49ers beaten again.
And 4-6 now?
Not that bad. 5-5.
Oh God.
They're at 500, yeah. But there's no real sign of that getting better anytime soon. So the Eagles are 8-2. Obviously, the Lions top. And then after that, you're looking at the only other Commanders have 7 wins, Cardinals have 6 wins. The Vikings, sorry, have 8 wins. I skipped the Vikings. And I don't know. Are they a real 8-win team? I'm not sure. We'll see.
Last 2 weeks, they haven't looked like one of them.
No, and then the Falcons are 6-5 in their top of their division.
Oh my God, that's depressing. Because they were horrendous yesterday.
Yeah. So there's not a lot of strength and depth there. But can any of these teams put a run together? Green Bay, obviously, I didn't mention them, 7-3. But like, I don't know what's going on at Green Bay.
That's a consistency issue with Green Bay as well, like we previously talked about with the other teams. I think there's two teams there, right? To me, anyway. The Lions, obviously, they're just blowing people out right now. And I think at this stage, I've been skeptical of the Lions coming into the year. I've been skeptical of the Lions early in the year. And I know we kind of said it as well. They're going to dominate the regular season. They're playing in domes all the time. They're stacked offensively, all this blah, blah, blah. But at this stage, the consistency is there. We kind of have to just acknowledge this is a contender. This is one of the best teams in the league.
Definitely.
You can't deny it.
Yeah.
And
I did see Za'Darius Smith go down with an injury last night, but I didn't see if he got up.
I think he was wearing a Rasheed Wallace jersey when he came into the stadium, which is a brilliant reference because he joined the Pistons the year they won the championship mid-season. But anyway, as long as he's fully healthy, he's going to be a key player for them. But overall, I think you're at the stage now where the offense is just executing to a degree and a consistency that no other team in the league is. And I know they've blown up out a couple of bad teams, and generally blowing out bad teams doesn't necessarily mean anything for the playoffs. But the level of execution, the confidence they've got, they're so clear on what their identity is. I love that they're calling their running back Sonic and Knuckles now, because it's just a perfect description of Jameer Gibbs and the other fellow, Dave Montgomery. And but the key detail here that I really want to talk about with this team, So right now, there's an epidemic across the NFL where the quality of offensive linemen is just in the bin. And look, quality of offensive line is generally not high. You normally don't have 10 or 15 teams with really good offensive lines. But in a given year, you'll have four or five really good offensive lines at least, and you'll have one or two maybe great. I think this year, we've got one great offensive line, and then every other team in the league is working around their offensive line. And the Detroit Lions are the team with the great offensive line. And that just changes the look of what the offense can do. It changes the challenges for the defense. If you look at Jameson Williams' long touchdown last night, and I know we're talking about blowing out a bad team or whatever, that's fine. But that comes from like having a great pocket, having a clean pocket, having all of their big plays that they're able to do. Jared Goff is always protected really, really well. And okay, maybe they come up against the Steelers in the Super Bowl. The Steelers are going to get some amount of pressure. But because the offensive line is that good, and because the play calling is that good, TJ Watt's not going to take over that game the way he does other games. So this team is so exciting and so talented. Dan Campbell was appointed. We were all laughing. We thought this was a ridiculous appointment. But he's been an incredibly good head coach from the point of view of getting out of the way of his coordinators, which is a really key detail of it, because it's essentially a management position when you're a head coach. And then from giving that team an identity and a belief and a confidence. And they're a joy to watch. They're a phenomenal football team. And I think like they've got to be the favourite in the NFC. And I wouldn't bet against them in the Super Bowl, no matter who they come up against.
Every day that we've done this podcast, by the end of it and it going up live, something major has happened. A major trade.
I know where you're going.
The New Orleans head coach sacked. Is Doug Peterson?
Got to be, right? I honestly didn't even want to bring him up because I just felt bad. I feel like we're cursing these people at this stage.
Well, it just looks like they are, they're going to have to fire him, right?
There's no identity with the team. There's no confidence with the team. They have expectations for Trevor Lawrence there that have not been met, haven't come close to being met. I think at this stage, the only reason they're probably not firing him is they're going to do him the respect of letting him run out the year. I'm not really sure how much of a benefit there is to firing someone mid-season, because let him keep losing games, get your draft position up, and then go after the coaches in the offseason, because you're not going to, it's not like you can hire Ruben Amorim the way Man United can during the season. You've got to wait until the end of the year to hire someone anyway. So, or unless you bring in someone like Belichick, for example, since he's on the street. So I he's gone. Like, his career in Jacksonville is over. Whether they fire him now, whether they fire him at the end of the season, it kind of doesn't really make a difference.
The two in teams at the moment, them, Tennessee, Cleveland, Vegas, and the Giants.
Of that group, the Giants should not be there. Everyone else kind of belongs there.
The Patriots have 3 wins. The Jets have 3 wins. Carolina have 3 wins. Carolina, for being the worst team in football, might have the 8th or 9th pick by the time the draft comes.
Well, they put their first overall quarterback back in. He knows how to play football better than Andy Dalton, surprisingly, isn't it?
All right. Was there anything else? Any other takeaways from the weekend?
Well, we skipped the Thursday game because it was just so long ago, but the Eagles deserve so much credit. Like Saquon, we've talked about over and over and over again, but Josh Sweat, Jordan Davis, and Jalen Carter on that defensive line. Oh my God. Jalen Carter is a 300 pounds, so it's like 24 kg, 23 kg. I'm not sure what it is. Or sorry, stone, not kg. But I'm not sure how big. He's a gigantic mammoth of a human being. And he moves like a ballerina with the explosiveness of like a horse, essentially. And he played every single snap in that game, 65 defensive players, I believe. And he just dominated, absolutely took over. Him and Jordan Davis next to each other, they're both gigantic human beings. And they just shut everything down in the middle, which were able to get pressure on Jaden Daniels in the backfield. And then you've Josh Sweat coming off the edge, just ripping past the left tackle on every single play. That's how they shut down Jaden Daniels. It's incredible, incredible defensive front. And the running game on the other side, they remind me a lot of Cam Newton's Carolina Panthers team that was like dominant and lost to Peyton Manning in the Super Bowl.
A bit like the situation in Buffalo. The Eagles didn't sack their coach, even though the swoon that they had at the end of last season in many franchises would have been sackable. I think he had a bit of credit in the bank for what he'd done with the team previously, and it's the right thing. It turns out these jobs are difficult. Sometimes you lose a season, but that doesn't mean you're a bad coach. You actually, if you're a good coach, you can learn from that.
It still wouldn't surprise me, though, if they had like a bad playoff loss that they'd get rid of him, just because Howie Roseman there is kind of like not really results-oriented. I think he's more looking at like process of these things, and he'll make a decision based on the overall setup of the team and how, the direction they're going in.
I'm sorry, is the direction of the team not good?
No, I think it is right now. But like, over the course of the season, if they come to the end of the season with that level of talent and that quality of team, and they lose by 30 points or whatever, if they get upset by a bad football team in the playoffs, I think then you're kind of looking at it going, are we wasting opportunities here? Because I do think there is still like question marks about Jalen Hurts and the head coach. One of them, I don't know if you move forward with the two of them. Because right now the team is at its peak in terms of talent around them. So what are you going to do to elevate those positions if those people aren't bringing you at least close to a Super Bowl? Like, if for example, for how good this team is, if they go out in the first round of the playoffs, Like, when is the last time they actually won and went into an NFC Championship game? I don't think it's been. Was it the Purdy 49ers here a couple years ago? Like, I think it's a very different team now compared to that.
Who is going to beat them apart from the Lions? In
great question.
In the NFC,
Vikings, I guess. I suppose if you lose to Sam Darnold throwing touchdowns all over the place, although they won't play the Vikings in the first round, will they? What's the current playoff picture?
I don't know. It's too early to be looking at that, but like, there aren't a million teams in the NFC who'd be thinking.
But that's kind of the point, though, isn't it? You'd expect them to win in the playoffs. So if they don't beat a team they're better than, then that's where the question marks come from.
That's definitely one way of looking at it. The other way is I'm writing them in pencil to be in the championship game.
I'm guessing my thought process comes back to a few weeks ago when he was still like giving abuse to his own fans. You know what I mean? I'm like, we're still only like 4 weeks away from him in Tampa turning around and like giving the finger to his own fan base.
But the teams,
although that's very Philly too, so maybe that actually endears him to
exactly. So the other teams that they're going to play are Washington again, Minnesota, Green Bay, Atlanta, or Tampa. Really? Sorry, Arizona.
Yeah.
The non-Detroit teams in. I'm making them.
It's a mismatch of
3 to 7 point favorites in all those games.
Yeah, they should be. Like I started this by saying there's two teams in the NFC who are contenders and they're the other ones. So really, I don't know what I'm talking about.
Sorry, Connor Williams is the other thing you want to talk about.
That is actually just to tie back to the offensive line issue, because I think it's going to get worse. So Connor Williams is like, I think 29, 30 around that, has been an NFL journeyman, I guess, but an effective one. He's started.
He's only 27.
Teams, 27 even, yeah. So he was drafted by the Cowboys, I think, played left guard there for a while. I think he went to Miami, now he went to Seattle, retired mid-season just now. Now, this is like a minor story overall, but the larger scheme of things, I think it's a change in philosophy and lifestyle choices of these players. Offensive linemen, they spend their time in the NFL, they don't get paid a huge amount relative to what they do to their bodies. A lot of the times in the past, you've had offensive linemen, like Andrew Whitworth, the obvious example, plays until he's 38, 39, stars for that long, gives you 15-plus years of high-quality offensive line play. Connor Williams is obviously never at that position or that level of a player. But if you've got guys like him who are starters, starting quality at least, or borderline starting quality, and they're walking away at 27 while still being paid and while still being options on the team, just because of how incredibly brutal that position is, I think that's going to be a trend we see more and more. These players are getting smarter. They're understanding they don't have to do this for 20 years. They don't understand the negative benefits of playing that long are much higher. And he walked away mid-season. Like, we haven't really seen this since Vontae Davis spent one day with the Bills and left at halftime. So I don't know if this is going to be like a trend that takes over, but I do think it's a sign that it's going to be such a challenge to have offensive linemen of a high quality play for long careers. I just don't think we're going to see that for much longer.
Are the Seahawks potentially any good? Mike McDonald obviously is their head coach, has an incredible reputation. It's still very young and is starting to get wins in tight games. It is still a tight division, but they're on 5-5. The Rams are 5-5. The Niners are 5-5. And the Cardinals topped that division 6-4.
I think you probably throw them in that group that you were just talking about a minute ago, with the Cardinals, the Commanders, and that group, to be honest. Like Geno, we all love Geno like because of his story, but like I don't think you're going to turn around and say he's a star quarterback. And then you look around the rest of the team, and it's like there's some good pieces there, there's some quality players, but someone like DK Metcalf no-shows too often. Tyler Lockett's getting old. They have Kenneth Murray's a linebacker. I always get two of them. Kenneth Williams. They have those guys there who can make big plays, but the consistency generally isn't there. And the identity of the Seahawks in the past when they were a great team was defensive, on the defensive side. And that's just like, I know they managed to contain the 49ers this week, but that's not saying a whole lot these days with all the injuries the 49ers have. So defensively, I don't think they're good enough to offset the inconsistency of their offense.
It was the LA Rams that beat Drake May's Patriots.
Ah, yes.
Matthew Stafford's back playing quite well. Four touchdowns.
He has it in him every so often, doesn't he?
Yeah. And
there's another NFC quarterback I want to talk about, though. I have a big, strong, bold take now. So now that Patrick Mahomes has lost the game, I think we can actually talk about MVP. And I know it's going to be Josh Allen. But I'm like, because I've spent over the last couple of weeks, I've been working on this large YouTube video analysis of Jaden Daniels. And I 100% am like, he's MVP. Make him MVP. I know he's a rookie. I know we don't do that. But the level he's playing at is stupidly good. I went into it going, this is going to be a really great rookie. This is going to be a really high quality video to make. I came away from it going, CJ Stroud was incredible last year. CJ Stroud isn't close to what he's doing. He's already, like, you can make an argument to me right now, he's the third best quarterback in this league, and I'd probably go, all right.
There is always a slump.
I'm sure it is, and it might have been the start of it last week.
At this time of the year for the rookies, because they train all the way through and they don't have proper, you know.
That's why I'm getting my hot take in now, because it's going to age very poorly.
There you go. All right, we can come back to that.
Save that clip, lads.
When we have a bit more information on that next week. But yeah, the Steelers game's live. We expect the Steelers fixture to be announced potentially tomorrow. I think there's a league meeting tomorrow.
Oh, ideal.
So we should find out if there's going to be a Steelers game in Ireland. Everybody's now talking about the impact of the Steelers game on Katie Taylor's potential fight, taking up one of the available dates for Croke Park to host a non-GAA related match.
It'd be a weird doubleheader, to be fair.
It would be. I think that...
Well, that'd be better than watching Jake Paul after a fight, wouldn't it?
I think they'll still have enough room for them to do everything. So we shall see Cian Gustaf.
But it's great that we're getting a Steelers team that's coming in that looks pretty good too, isn't it?
Well, amazing. Yeah. They could be Super Bowl champions. Like, it's not ridiculous to think they could win the Super Bowl from this stage.
Yeah, let's leave on that before things get really weird.
They're probably fifth or sixth favourites, but yeah. See you next week, folks.
US Sport.
On Off the Ball.
With 888 Casino. 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.